Bonjour, Katie.
Bonjour. Get you in your lingo.
I know. I just thought I'd make you feel a bit more at home, seeing as you've made it back to France.
Ah, back on the continent at last. It is good to be back. I've got access to proper bread again. Ate a pan au chocolat this morning. All is well in the world. It's good. I will say one thing, though, about returning to Paris in the time of coronavirus. You know how I often complain about how, despite being a very beautiful city that I love very much, Paris does sometimes smell like wee wee in the summer?
Yes.
So like, imagine combining that with wearing a mask. It's just like, it's not the whole city, it's just Gare du Nord. But we arrived and I took this big first lungful of Parisian air expecting it to be really nice, and this wee wee smell just got stuck in my mask. And it was a wonderful welcome back.
Maybe you need a better mask. Maybe you need to get one of those, like a gas mask.
Full on gas mask. Seems like slight overkill. But no, it is very, very wonderful to be back here. But you've also been travelling this week, haven't you, for the first time?
Yeah, I went on a little weekend holiday to Ghent, which maybe sounds wild to you, depending on where in the world you are right now. But that is actually officially allowed now between the Netherlands and Belgium. And it was really nice and a bit strange.
Why was it strange?
Just travelling and going to different places and staying in a different house.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
I have to admit, being back in my own flat, it feels a bit like being in some kind of holiday home. Like I've forgotten where the plates are. Which is impressive because it's a very small flat, but it's nice.
Are all your plants still alive?
Everyone is still alive, thanks to friend and listener of this podcast, Erica. Merci, Erica.
Erica, you're a hero.
What are we talking about this week, Dominic?
This week, we're going to be speaking to Igor Levit. He's a Russian-German superstar pianist who has harnessed the power of social media during this lockdown to share his artistry via an incredibly successful series of daily live concerts from his living room on Twitter. They were viewed tens of thousands of times each day from his Twitter feed, a feed which is actually as much political as it is musical most of the time. And in fact, he describes himself as European on his Twitter bio. So we'll be speaking about that and his music a little bit later on in the show. But first... Who's had a good week, Katie?
Well, seeing as I'm back in France finally, I am bringing you a French politics update this week because it has been a fantastic week for the French Green Party. The Greens and their allies scored really big in this week's local elections, and they're now going to be running a bunch of the country's biggest cities, including Lyon, Strasbourg and Bordeaux. They're calling it the Green Wave. Now, this isn't the only story of the night. Marine Le Pen and the far-right Rassemblement National also did pretty well, it must be said. Her ex-partner Louis Alliot is the new mayor of Perpignan, which is the biggest city that the far-right has ever won in France. And the other big story was that Macron's centrist party did really pretty badly, which, to be honest, no one was really surprised by. Not so much because he's unpopular personally, although his ratings aren't amazing. It's more because he came to power in 2017, so like just 3 years ago, kind of out of nowhere. And his party has like no local infrastructure. It's really weak at the grassroots.
Aren't French presidents always unpopular?
Yeah, French people do have a habit of disliking their presidents and maybe liking them a bit more after they've gone. This is true.
So is this being seen as a big kind of transformative moment for the Greens?
Yeah, I mean, all the commentators are asking, like, is the moment where the Greens become like the most vocal and visible opposition to the government? Because on a national level, even if Macron isn't super, super popular, both the main left-wing and right-wing parties have been really pretty useless recently, and it hasn't really felt like there's been much of an opposition on either side. So yeah, it is being seen as a pretty big moment, I think. Why have people turned to the Greens, I hear you ask?
Do you?
Yes, I do. In answer to your question, I think for a couple of reasons. I think firstly, because even though the socialists did okay in these elections, more and more people on the left are seeing the Greens as like a more effective place to put their vote because nationally the socialists aren't doing amazingly. And also because I think in cities in particular, and this is a very urban Green vote, the environment has just been really rising up the list of priorities for lots of voters. And especially during the lockdown, I think having lower pollution has been like a really striking feature of the pandemic for lots of people in cities, including yours and mine.
Very true. Talking of the pandemic, I saw that quite a few of the politicians, the French politicians who won, were celebrating without masks. Has that been controversial?
Not really. I would say mask wearing is sort of hit and miss. I can't say it has caused much of a stir. I guess partly because the French COVID numbers seem to be okay for now. Touch wood.
Is Macron now going to like pivot towards being an environmental politician to try and like, how do you get rid of a wave? To try and dampen the wave?
It's already very damp.
Break the wave?
That'll do. He definitely feels like he has to. So like off the back of this green wave, he's already announced that he's going to be putting 15 billion euros extra into the green transition. But to be honest, Macron promising to be green like isn't really that new anyway. He was, after all, the guy who coined the phrase, make the planet great again. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. And just before COVID, the government set up this citizen panel to spend ages coming up with green ideas that they thought were a good idea. So 150 normal people from all walks of life were picked to come up with ideas for how France could meet its climate change targets, which was a really interesting democratic experiment, actually. And they came up with about 150 proposals for Macron. And he said that he's keeping almost all of them. So there isn't much detail yet on how that's going to happen, but he definitely wants to look like he's serious about all of this stuff. I am going to stop yakking now, but just before I do, I'm so excited to be back in the thick of French politics again that it would be remiss of me not to mention the other big French politics story of the week, which was that former French presidential candidate François Fillon and his wife Penelope have been handed prison sentences for this massive scandal that erupted during the presidential election 3 years ago. Did you follow it at the time?
Yeah, I did. I remember it was like all over the news. And it started simply because of like a piece of journalism in a satirical magazine, didn't it?
Yeah, it was the Canard Enchaîné newspaper that uncovered basically that Penelope, the Welsh wife of François Fillon, although it's quite funny, she gets called Penelope in France, which I think is a great pronunciation. The newspaper uncovered that his wife had been basically pretending to work for him as a parliamentary assistant for years, claiming more than €1 million of public money while she was basically hanging out with her horses at their chateau and having a nice time. The scale of the fraud was astonishing. So Fillon has been given a 5-year prison sentence, 3 years suspended. So in theory, he should serve some actual time behind bars. It's one of the toughest sentences ever given to a French politician that senior. But both he and Penelope are appealing, so he's still out on bail.
I do find it extraordinary to think that if that article hadn't come out, if these journalists hadn't done this impressive investigative work, then he could have been president now of France. He was the favourite, wasn't he?
He was, the man who should be president. Things could have been very, very different.
Just shows how important journalism is.
Oh, thanks. It feels like a personal compliment.
Oh, it wasn't meant as that.
Who's had a bad week, Dominic?
It's been a bad week for Google in Romania. They have been punished by Romania's National Anti-Discrimination Council after an internet user on Google Maps renamed the new and unfinished Orthodox Cathedral in Bucharest as the Cathedral for Making a Fool of the Romanian Nation.
Love it.
Well, the Anti-Discrimination Council did not love it, and they did not love the fact that Google left it up for a few hours and didn't report it quickly to the Google European headquarters in Ireland. They were handed a €2,000 fine. I think they'll probably just about manage to cover that. And they also had to post the ruling of the Anti-Discrimination Council on Google Romania's homepage for 10 days.
That's them told. This internet user who changed the name of the cathedral sounds like he's got a bit of an axe to grind. Why was he so pissed off? Was she?
We don't actually know anything about this specific internet user's own motivation, but the building does have a lot of critics. They think this cathedral exudes a sort of megalomania and excess, and it is seen by many as having been a bit of a waste of public funds during a time when there is underinvestment in many other vital public services such as health, education, culture.
Just looking at the building, there's some lovely gold domes on it. It looks quite expensive.
It is very expensive, and once it's finished, it will actually be the largest and the tallest Orthodox church in the world. It is expected to cost €110 million, and 7,000 people will be able to worship in there at the same time. So a lot of people and a lot of money. But then again, Romania is a very religious country. In fact, according to the Pew Research Center, Romania is the most religious country in Europe.
Hmm.
And the Romanian census in 2011 showed that 81% of Romanian citizens are Eastern Orthodox, although the actual regular church-going numbers are considerably lower than this. But the fact that the state are investing so much in this church rubs some people up the wrong way when Romania is officially a secular state. And it is clearly a very expensive building. Work on the building began in 2010, and they demolished three churches to make space for this enormity of a cathedral.
Whoa, it's a mega church.
It actually is, and even though it hasn't been completed yet, it was consecrated on the 25th of November 2018, so a lot is already usable, but it's still not going to be completed probably until 2024 when they put on the final touches of paint. So yeah, it has run over schedule. But hey, check out the Sagrada Familia in Barcelona, which has been under construction for 138 years, and this won't seem like so much of a delay.
Just to raise a question about the original complaint against Google, is it really that bad what this person wrote against them? Does Google really deserve to be fined for someone saying that this church is an embarrassment? Isn't that like just a member of the public expressing an opinion about something?
Yeah, and they did take it down after a few hours, so I imagine Google may be feeling sorry for themselves a bit.
Seems harsh.
Although it was only 2,000 euros, so maybe it is a proportionate fine for such a huge company. I don't know. But here's an interesting fact of the day.
Go on.
This cathedral is positioned opposite the country's parliamentary palace, which according to the Guinness Book of Record is the heaviest building in the world.
How do they know that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. And it's also, by some estimations, the world's most expensive administrative building. So it seems like there is a bit of a thing for building rather extravagant big buildings in Romania.
Who knew?
Anyway, I'm sure this isn't the last time that someone's going to play a prank on a large public building by renaming it on Google Maps, even if it is only temporary. I was particularly tickled by the story last year from Yorkshire in the UK when a pupil renamed their own school, which is Hornsey School and Language College, as Hornsey Prison and Hell on Earth. Have you ever been tempted to cheekily rename a building on Google Maps, Katie?
Not yet, but I am worried that we've now given all of our listeners the idea. I just want to say that we absolutely do not condone people renaming things on Google.
Unless it's our office headquarters.
As capital of the
European brilliantness.
Yes. We have two wonderful new supporters to thank this week for keeping this podcast running, who are Spencer Crawford and Lee Barrow. Thank you guys so much. I know that this podcast might sound like an effortless production, but it actually does take quite a lot of time to research and produce each week. So it is people like you, Lee and Spencer, who are kindly keeping us in business.
Yeah, thank you so much. Please head to patreon.com/Europeans Podcast if you'd like to join them and have access to our secret Patreon Facebook page, which is growing and growing in its niceness. Come and help us out with a dollar or two a month. That would be great. Actually, it's minimum two. So
you could give hundreds.
You could also give hundreds. We would not object to that.
Then we can turn my flat into a capital of European brilliance.
Can't wait. So this week, we're going to be speaking to a star of the classical music world, and it wasn't even my idea as a classical musician. It was Katie's idea. Why did you want to speak to Igor Levit, Katie?
Just to make myself look cultured.
Fair enough.
That's it. No, that's not just it. I have been following Igor on Twitter for a long time because he's very vocal. He's not just a superstar concert pianist. He's also really big into politics. Crops up fairly regularly, I think, on German TV panel shows talking about politics and hate speech, among other things. And he describes himself as a European on his Twitter. So that's an instant follow from us, as far as I'm concerned.
If anyone wants Katie to follow them, then write European in your profile. That's clear.
Job done. Igor, among other things, during this lockdown, has not only live streamed more than 50 concerts, but a few weeks ago he took on the slightly insane undertaking of playing Vexation by Erik Satie, a piano piece that takes more than 15 hours to play And he did that to raise money for performers who've been struggling during the pandemic, which is a really lovely thing to do. So we had a really lovely chat about that and music and politics and the ethics of giving your art away for free. Enjoy. You've done a couple of things over the last few months that have made me feel like I've had a really unproductive lockdown. Maybe we can start with the concerts that you live streamed from your flat in Berlin. You're obviously not the only artist to have used your mobile phone to carry on performing, but I haven't heard of many people who've done like more than 50 performances. Did you know when you decided to do the first one that it was going to be the start of this huge long run?
The clear answer is no. I mean, I knew, and it was very clear from day one, that whoever wanted to see the signs had to see the signs that this pandemic and the consequences wouldn't be a short run, but a biblically long marathon. And so I was very clear-minded about the fact that concerts as we know them wouldn't come back in May or June or whatever. So this kind of hope I very quickly put away. Now, when I had the idea, which came to me very spontaneously, about the house concert, what I did is I tweeted to my followers. I said, well, as long as we can't see each other in person, I'll play. This was one of those very typical Igor actions. First do and then think. So, you know, and then I didn't think about the consequences. But then it was an absolute essential part of this time for me, just to know that I can play for other people, that I know that I can share it. It was both important for me in regard of giving something to the people, but also in regard of giving something to myself. If I wouldn't have had these concerts, I don't know how I would have coped with this time, honestly.
How natural did it feel for you to just like turn on the camera and start talking and playing for your followers?
Totally natural. I don't care if it is one person I play for in my living room, 2,000 people in a hall, or 30,000 people watching online. As long as I know that there are people, I play and enjoy and love what I do. And so it was totally natural.
How did you decide what to play each day? Was it just on the spur of the moment, depending on your mood? Oh, I think I'll play this.
Yeah, like between 2 hours and 30 minutes before the performance, I would announce what I'm going to play. Like, it was just, okay, I feel like Nina Simone today. Let's just play Nina Simone. It was actually a total artistic dream.
Apart from your concerts, the other thing you've done to make headlines during the pandemic is that you decided to give a performance of Vexation by Erik Satie.
Yes.
This piece, I mean, it can take people 20 hours to perform. You did it, I think, in just over 15.
16, yeah.
Chucking all these sheets of paper on the floor as you went. Like, why? Why did you decide to do this?
Well, I always wanted to do it. I always wanted to play Vexation. And it just felt right in this period of time. Time and again and again and again, repetition about nothing, I think, is something we face in this time. I mean, being switched off as a performing artist is exactly this reality. You sit at home or wherever, and the sense of your being is gone. We had this idea of printing out the papers and then donating them, which happened 2 days ago, and we collected 25,000 euros, which is, I think, phenomenal for just printed papers.
What do you think about the argument that's been like growing in the classical music world and the theatrical world that too many of us artists are giving away our material for free online during this lockdown? Did you grapple with that?
Well, this is a very complicated topic. Yes, it is a big problem that there is no system of sort of reward system of streaming. All you can do is ask for donations. It is the industry's fault. For years and years and years and years, many people were begging the players in our industry, start understanding the digital world is growing. It is important. It is important to understand specifically how does Facebook work? How does Twitter work? How does Instagram work? What are the ramifications of using the digital world for our business? This is not something you solve in a week. And now we're complaining that there is no system of payment. Yeah, well, good morning. I mean, I buy the argument of the problem of giving valuable work for free. I 100% agree. But I don't buy the argument that
the artists who were giving, you know, who were playing for free are a problem for the industry.
I wonder whether it's where you're coming from is the German system, where it seems to me that the state values artists and culture pretty highly compared to almost any other country in Europe. Whereas if you look at some artists in a country like the UK, where I come from, the state has basically not supported the artists there at all during this crisis. And I guess you could argue that some kind of protest, there needs to be a way for the politicians to realize what they're missing. And I guess that's the argument I would make. Do you have any idea as to why you think art and culture is held so at such a high value in Germany?
The political actions during the pandemic for the art world were exceptional. Some of them took time, but then again, no one ever had to cope with this kind of situation. But the general understanding for the value of culture, again, with exceptions, was very high. And, you know, I feel a little funny saying that because obviously, I mean, most of the time I'm the one who would, you know, criticize politics for many reasons. And now things are becoming kind of weird in regard of how do you open halls, how many people do you let in the halls. This is highly problematic. But before that, the immediate help for artists, the immediate help for institutions, the immediate help for the systemic survival of this industry was really exceptional. And yes, there is an understanding here for the value of the cultural institutions, which is great. Yeah, I'm not a UK insider. All I can say that what my friends tell me from the UK and also from the United States is highly tragic.
Do you see your musical performances as having a political goal or political angle?
Of course they have, because I am a political animal. But it has nothing to do with the message of a certain sonata or a certain piece. Music can do a lot. Music can create a very substantial climate, but music alone, you know, can't save the world, let's put it this way.
We have all been talking a lot about racism in Europe recently. And I know you've spoken about your own experience of anti-Semitism in Germany, a country that is your home, where you've lived since you were 8 years old. And yet on numerous occasions, you found yourself treated like an outsider. I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about those experiences.
In our own specific way, we have and we suffer from systemic racism in Germany. Absolutely. Every time you suffer from racism, every time someone sort of tries to, I very often use this picture of someone takes a rubber and just tries to erase you from the piece of paper, you know. Because if somebody tells you don't have the right to be here, or your position is under me, or you are not part of this society, you are not part of this culture, he's basically telling you have no right to exist. This kind of wound does not heal. At least in my case. I don't want to live in such a way that I think they and me, the Germans and me, I am part of this society. I am part of this country. This is my home country. There's this great quote by James Baldwin who said that I love America more than any other country, and this is why I criticize it more than any other country. I think that something like that he said, I don't remember the exact quote. And I would say, yeah, this is my home country. But this is why I will, as vocally as I can, criticize this country for its systemic racism.
One of the things we're trying to do with this podcast, what we've been trying to do since we started it, was to try and work out why it is that more people don't feel European. Particularly, we felt that with our background as two British people who now live outside Britain on the continent. And we saw on your Twitter biography that you describe yourself as European, and that really stuck out to us because we don't often see people put that up front. I was wondering what being European meant for you and why you decided to put it up there on your Twitter bio so prominently.
Let's put it this way. The process of my very own politicization began kind of in a soft way, in a tender way, around about 2005, I began to read about boats with refugees coming to Lampedusa in Italy. I mean, this topic is very old. We just didn't want to see it. And so I started, you know, getting into it, started reading about it. It became a very, very important part of my life. And then the big bang of me being a political animal began during the Euro crisis. What part of the media and part of the political society did, they began to use language like the lazy Greek people against us, they against us. And whoever had his eyes open could see how dangerous this will become. This is a mistake, and this is a political stain of the last years, which I find inexcusable and indefensible. It is a shame. And so in this time, I started to ask myself, okay, what does it mean for me to be a European? And what does it not mean for me to be a European? So that's when I came up with this term. As much as I see huge problems within Europe, and I'm asking myself, okay, what are European values? Is it, you know, throwing tear gas against refugees on the Greek border? I hope not. Not saving people in their boats? I hope not. This is not European values, this is shameless. But there is something to fight for, and there's something to stand for, and this is where I come from.
If you haven't seen them already, do go and check out Igor's live streams, which are all still available, including the crazy long Erik Satie piece. We will link to that in the show notes. Dominic really liked the fact that he had lots of snacks next to him on the table to keep himself sustained during this super long performance.
It's important.
Sustenance is very important, yeah. You can also follow Igor on Twitter at Igor Pianist for lots of music and politics. Since we've just interviewed a concert pianist, should we move seamlessly into this week's cultural recommendations?
Ah, yes. I was thinking of moving seamlessly into Happy Ending, the segment that you forgot last week.
You're never going to let me forget that, are you?
No.
No. What's your isolation inspiration this week, Dominic?
My isolation inspiration this week is a tip from one of our Patreon supporters, Jude, who flagged up this documentary, The Fog of Srebrenica, which is looking back on the awful genocide in Srebrenica, which saw its 25th anniversary last week. We'll put a link to that film in the show notes. Katie, what's yours?
Well, thanks for giving me a super awkward segue. I watched the obvious thing this week, which was the new Eurovision film that came out on Netflix. This feels horribly inappropriate, and I just want to go and melt in a corner for even talking about it. Have you seen it?
No, I want to watch it. Should I watch it?
Well, I'm just going to come out and say it. The reviews have not been great. Someone described it as a solid 2-star film, but I really enjoyed it. It's kind of terrible, but also really heartwarming, which I guess is a really accurate reflection of how I feel about Eurovision. It is a parody. It's got Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams in it, and Pierce Brosnan for some reason. So it really is an all-star cast, and it's got a very sort of like Zoolander, Anchorman type humour. It's for children.
Why are you questioning Pierce Brosnan's presence on this show when he's the only actual European of those three actors you
Yeah,
named?
Very true. I always forget he's Irish. But it is an all-star cast. But the real stars are all the previous Eurovision contestants who are in it making cameos, including Conchita Wurst of Austrian fame, and my personal favourite, Salvador Sobral from Portugal.
And it's about an Icelandic entry, isn't it?
Yeah, which is why there was this conspiracy theory that all of the success of this year's Icelandic entry was like some sort of weird hoax to promote the film or something.
Netflix promo.
So weird. It was just a great song.
Ooh, interesting. It's funny, I did ask my Icelandic musician friend if he knows this year's Icelandic entry of Eurovision, and he says he knows who he is, but he didn't actually know him. And that made me very suspicious, because Iceland's such a small country, I thought every musician knew each other.
It's not that small.
Although maybe everyone in Iceland is a musician as well.
There are lots of jokes about how small Iceland is, you'll be glad to hear, along with some frankly dodgy accents. But anyway, yeah, I think most Eurovision fans will get a kick out of this film, even though it's very silly. I think it's a silly film that we need right now in a year without Eurovision.
I will definitely spend an evening watching this.
I don't think you'll regret it. It's time for Happy Ending.
Yeah. So A recent ruling from the Spanish Supreme Court means that official government and municipality buildings cannot carry non-official flags.
Okay.
But in the small town of Villanueva de Algaidas in the province of Malaga, the local officials thought, we'll get away with it. We can put a pride flag up for Pride Month. No one's going to object to that. They've done it for the last few years. Sadly, three individuals reported the unofficial flag to the police, and the administration had no choice but to take the flag down.
Boo.
This really saddened some people, including a shop owner who grew up in the town, Antonio Carlos Alcantara. But despite his sadness, he came up with a plan. He realized that he had hundreds of pride flags in his shop, and so he went onto a local Facebook group and posted asking if anyone wanted one for free. There was immediately a huge response, and he drove straight into town and spent hours handing over all of the roughly 400 pride flags that he had in his storage.
Aww.
I know, sweet, right? And it should be noted that this is a town of 4,200 people, so giving away 400 flags is a pretty good achievement. But that's not where it stopped. According to The Guardian, another local shop also sold out of all of its pride flags and had to order in a whole new stock. The town was transformed into a parade of rainbows, a much more glorious effect than the one single flag above the administrative building. Alcantara, this shop owner, has high hopes that this tradition will continue, saying, "Now I'm trying to propose that this year doesn't just become something that happened once and never again. Every year, Villanueva de Algaidas should fill up with colour."
That is truly lovely. I also think it's really impressive for a town that size that these shops had so many pride flags in stock.
Well,
what's with their stock control?
No, actually, maybe I wasn't clear enough. Alcantara, who grew up in the town, he actually has a shop outside of the town. So it was two shops combined, really.
I see. But still, an impressive haul.
Well, Katie, I better go and let you get back to settling in, back home.
Got many pan au chocolats to eat.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Can you bring me one?
Oh, I actually can do that now.
It's definitely an essential journey.
Dominic needs his pan au chocolat. All right, well, I'll start planning that trip. In the meantime, if you would like to hang out with us on social media this week, we would love to hear from you. We are on Twitter at EuropeansPod, Instagram at EuropeansPodcast, and we're on Facebook. If you just type in The Europeans Podcast, you will find us.
See you all next week.
Bye.